and I met your mother. Dad was on the switch engine there at Palestine when I came home. So he had gone back to work on the road. The muscle in his left arm had gotten better, and he was able to pass the physical examination last year of the war. And when he went out of office, he served two terms as tax assessor in Collector in Anderson County, and went out of office January the 1st and went to work for the railroad company again on January the 2nd. And but anyway, he was on the switch engine that switched there in the yard, a regular 8-to-5 job. So he bid that job in on his seniority, you see, so he could be at home with Mom, you know, because she was still sort of puny health. And so the Royal Bank was right across the street there from where he would stop in the afternoon, you know. So when I went over there to deposit his check, well, I knew Hazel. You know, I'd gone to school with her out of Slocum, but I didn't even know Hazel had a sister. And so that's where I first met your mother. And we didn't really start dating together until, gosh, it was almost, I think, around Christmas time, 46, even later on. And, well, I thought I was in love with this girl from Tennessee. It was the reason for that, that I had met, you know, when I don't know whether I ever told you that story.
Were you, when you were up up there on your deal?
Yeah. And she was sitting with three or four other girls that were in the row right behind old Monk and I at the Grand Ole Opry. And, of course, dashing young soldiers, you know, we wanted to meet the girls. So we took our program and had them give us our address, you know. But she was a mighty fine girl and good family. And I hope she had a good life because, boy, she was faithful and writing to me while I was overseas. And shoot, I got a mail from her, come rain or shine. And but, you know, the distance between our homes and all, while we just gradually grew apart, and then I met your mother, and that took care of that.
Yeah.
But,
well, then, well, let's kind of pick that up and tell me something about Mom and all that.
Okay.
And
well, for like I say, we really started dating pretty regularly in December and January of, that would be January of 47. And then I had this, I had taken this civil service exam for a railway postal clerk's job. I guess I took that exam around 1st of December in 46 because I still had an infection on my hands, you know, that crud, jungle crud. And I'd been battling that stuff, and it, you know, it was discouraging because I couldn't do anything hardly with my hands because I had to keep salve on there, you know, a lot of times when it would be bad.
Oh, I see.
And, but anyway, I took the examination anyway because I didn't know what I was going to do, whether I was going to go back to school or what. And I couldn't go back to school then because of my hand. So the grades had begun to get better through the help of a young doctor there in Palestine that he thought he had the same thing when he was in the South Pacific. And he was able to help me with it. And so I took had a chance to get this part-time job at a railroad company in the freight claim department. Went to work as a file clerk and then a mail clerk, and then I moved on up to freight claim investigator. You know, claims, I'd check claims, see if they were in line and then pay them merchandise on trucking and stuff like that. And in the meantime, Zoe and I were dating regularly, and we played Cupid and got Harold Dearman and his wife together.
Edith, yeah.
Yeah. And so we introduced Edith and Harold, and we double dated a lot. Had a lot of fun together. And we'd go around and pick up the girls and swing around through Jacksonville and down to Rusk and go in the place there where the highways intersect, a little cafe there, have coffee and donuts and everything, and then swing on back around and take the girls home. And they'd spend the rest of the weekend, you know, with their families because they lived real close together down there at Hickory Grove. And, you know, where the church was there down below the old Grandpa Rich's place, remember the church?
Oh, yeah.
Well, just across the road was where Edith's folks lived. So they were both close together. And so while I was working for the railroad company, I guess it was around the 1st of April that I got a I noticed that I had passed the civil service exam for the railway postal clerk job, and that they would need me in Houston, in the Houston district. So I paid much more money than I was making for the railroad company. So I went to Houston to work out there as a substitute clerk wherever they needed me. And like I say, I'd make runs to from Palestine to Houston and back, and then from, say, Houston to Corpus Christi and back to Houston, and Houston to Shreveport and back, and just wherever they needed me. And it really was not a a good life as far as any home life was concerned.
Yeah.
You know? And in addition to that, well, I had to do a lot of studying the post office memories, you know, about where to send the mail. We'd have distribution points that we had to memorize, and say they'd give you a test once a year, and you had to throw about 98% correct. Or, you know, if you did it again and didn't get it, why, well, they'd release you. So it was a lot of memory work and a lot of time that you felt like ought to be your own that you had to spend studying for an examination. And but anyway, we went ahead and made plans to be married, and we married on September the 3rd, 1947, while I was still working as a mail clerk. And I continued to work as a mail clerk then for the rest of the year, and I guess it was along in February of 48 that I decided that I would maybe go back to school, you know, thinking about going back to school. So I couldn't get in at that time from the semester that already started. So I went to Nixon Business College, typing and bookkeeping and, you know, those courses that they offered under the GI Bill, and finished that. And it was about this time that my friend in Palestine, Ted Moffitt, who was an architect, that I'd gone to high school with and was a freshman at A&M with the same time I was, that had been a captain in infantry in World War II in the South Pacific, and he was given command of headquarters company 1st Battalion, 143rd Infantry, when they reactivated the 36th Division as a National Guard Division in 48. And I was having a cup of coffee with him there one day, and he says, "Are you going to go back to school?" And I said, "Well, I've been sort of thinking about it." He said, "Well, why don't you," he says, "you were a first three grade enlisted man." I said, "Yeah, staff sergeant." He said, "Well, why don't," says, "I can get you a direct commission in the National Guard." He said, "We need, weren't you in communications?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "We need a battalion communications officer." I said, "Man, I don't know anything about infantry communication." He said, "Well," I said, "we'll teach you." And he said, "The thing about it is, if you go back to school, the first battalion holds their staff, headquarters staff training site there in Goodwin Hall on the campus of A&M, and the battalion commander, Colonel Wilkins, is a veterans advisor at A&M at this time. And so you get one drill a week there and then go to summer camp, and it'll mean a paycheck of around $140 every quarter to help you out on you know, your school expenses, living expenses." Well, it sounded pretty good, you know. So I said, "Okay, let's do it." So he got the wheels in motion to get a commission in the Guard, and said he had went before a board of colonels over at Corsicana, which I found out later was at the formality. And then I went to summer camp in North Fort Hood with the company in the summer camp of 1948. And that was the roughest 2 weeks of military life that I've ever had, because here I was as a newly commissioned second lieutenant, and had never been in an infantry unit before. And I got to camp. It was funny, Ted was the headquarters company commander, and I was the battalion communications officer assigned to the company. And Barney Welsh, a former Aggie football star, was the A&P platoon leader. He was supposed to be at camp. We got to camp, and Barney wasn't able to come because of some reason. I don't know, he didn't get to come. So that just left Ted and me as the only officers in the headquarters company for the summer camp. On Monday, after we got there Sunday, the regimental adjutant had to go home with serious illness in his family. Colonel Ives, the regimental commander, called Ted in and made him acting regimental adjutant for the summer camp. So that left me as the only officer in headquarters company. I was acting headquarters company commander, battalion communications officer, battalion training officer, company physical training officer. There was about 7 categories, and I was all of them. I lost 15 pounds in 2 weeks, and Colonel Wilkins at mess one day there, mess hall. And he said, "Hey, getting long, Ben." I said, "Yeah, I don't know whether I'm going to make it or not, Colonel." "Oh, yeah," he said, "it'd be good for you." Yeah, I don't know about that. But I still hadn't definitely made up my mind to go back to school. And Breezy Brazil, you remember him? Mm-hmm. He went over and had dinner at that place right on the campus. He was the battalion executive officer and a great guy. Both he and Colonel Wilkins both. I'll never forget him. Anyway, old Breezy kept hounding me, "When are you coming back to school? You need to get back in school and get your education." And I said, I kept giving him these excuses. "No, man, I'm married now and I'm going to have a hard time finding a place to live," which it was. Mm-hmm. And I said, "I've got a good job making good money, you know, my wife's got a job in the bank, she's making good money." I said, "I just hate to give it up, you know." Well, he still didn't take no for an answer. So when we got back from summer camp at 49, we were living in a garage apartment there just behind, pretty close to the old post office. I don't know whether we ever pointed it out to you.
In the Palestine?
Yeah. Anyway, on Monday night after we got back from camp that year, my phone rang. It was Breezy. He said, "Okay, I want you to listen." Says, "I've got your wife a job in the College Station State Bank. I've got you an apartment two blocks from the bank. Now what's your excuse?" I said, "I'll be there." So really, I credit him for getting me, you know, and driving me back to school. Mm-hmm. Like I should have been able to go on my own, but I just never did do it. And so I really have a, you know, a deep spot in my heart for
mm-hmm.
him.
Yeah.
And Colonel Wilkins, and when he found out I was coming today, when I got there, and all, he says, "You got a desk?" I said, "No, you got that desk that's at your house."
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when I was graduating at May, I said, "What do you want me to do with that table that I borrowed from you for a couple of years ago?" He said, "Would you like to keep it?" I said, "Yeah." So that's where the story behind that.
I see. Okay. So then y'all moved on over
moved
to
on
College
to
Station.
College Station. We were first living in a duplex there that the Baptist preacher, Brother Brown, pastor of the First Baptist Church there in College mm-hmm. Station, was the, he owned the duplex. So he was our landlord.
Mm-hmm.
And he had two, a driveway in between. He had a duplex here, a driveway, and another duplex here. And the one on the right was more modern and nicer, you mm-hmm. know, and more room than the other one. So we had a chance to move into the other side after the first semester, which we did. And then we lived in that, until the end of that semester, which would have been September 1950. We were able to, we'd have my name on the list for college housing over in College View.
Mm-hmm.
And name came up over there then in time to get in for the fall semester of 1950. And we were in C-16Z unit of the old Army barracks building that had been made into, you know, apartments.
Mm-hmm.
We were upstairs on the end. And we lived there until I finished graduating. And then we came on to Houston when I went to work for Humble. And when you were born, we were living in an apartment over there for Lawndale. I think we drove by and showed it to you one time, where 75th Street and Lawndale intersect. The apartments were just back west of there, about two blocks.
Hmm.
And then we had the opportunity to buy that place on Detroit Street because Mr. Ledbetter was going to build a place out in Garden Villas on a lot that he had, and he asked Jim if he knew someone that would like to have first chance at buying the place he was going to sell it. And Jim said, "Well, I don't know, but my brother might be interested. He's in an apartment right now."
Mm-hmm.
Which we jumped at the chance, you know, to mm-hmm. get it. And so immediately the old place didn't have but two circuits, electrical circuits in it. And every time you plug in a heater when we brought you home, you know, you were only about 3 weeks old when we moved there. And trying to get, it was in March, early part of March. No, around the 1st of April, but it was still cool. Plug in a heater, why, it'd blow the fuse, you know. Mm. There wasn't enough capacity mm-hmm. for the circuit. So I just had the whole house completely rewired. And got six or eight circuits in there. So, you know, it'd be dangerous like the way it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then that was where we lived then, you know, until she died.
Mm-hmm.